For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Welcome to another episode of Stargazing, where our famous host, Wes, is out doing beer league type stuff, so he left us all the hard work. This is Mark Zimmerman. I'm here with Tyler. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. You've been keeping the lights on at the site here lately, doing postseason post-mortem profiles. How do you like the forward so far? How are free agents looking?
You know, it's an interesting case where, at least for the content that has been written or published so far, I like our forwards that are free agents. I'm not sure I'd resign any of them, but that's a whole other conversation in just and of itself, of subtracting the actual performance from, okay, but what about going forward?
And David put some stuff up today talking in a bit more general detail about different ways that the Stars could go, bringing in free agents, things like that. What in your mind do the Stars need to concentrate in order to solidify the forward group?
I mean, I think the biggest issue I think facing the Stars when it comes to the forward specifically is they had a huge uptick in their scoring from this season compared to years past. And a big chunk of that, obviously has to do with the coaching style, that it's, Pete DeBoer coming in and not having this, shut down, defensive turtling hockey that we've seen in Dallas from Bonus, Montgomery, and Hitchcock, basically since the rough days. That's a big portion. And some of it's kind of chicken and egg effect, but, we've also seen, we had a massive resurgent performance from Ben, being second team in the scoring. Pavelski continues to break the aging curve. We even kind of saw, in his first full season kind of healthy, Tyler Seguin, doing some good contributions. And I think the thing you have to be worried about if you're the Stars moving forward is getting that, quote unquote, secondary scoring, because, you can't just assume, all right, well, we have Pavelski, Robertson, hence those are going to be a dynamite top line. We have Ben and Johnston, and then, slot someone next to them, and that's another great one. You have to be prepared for a Ben regression back to his prior seasons. You have to be ready for Father Time finally catching up with Joe Pavelski and stuff like that. And if you have some of those players that kind of have those regress seasons, now you're suddenly looking at a forward core where you have, as far as high scorers, you have Hintz, Robertson, Johnston, and then really no other strongly defined ones. And even then, Johnston could have a sophomore slump. So I think it's really important for Dallas is that they can't just rest on their laurels and assume that things will only get better. And so that means taking a good hard look at people currently on the roster who are up for free agency, who are the other options available versus free agency and trade, which, like you said, David did a great job breaking down, and just figuring out how can we best improve our odds and, improve our, making sure our forward core is as good as it can be going forward.
Well, and the thing is, the Stars actually have a bit of flexibility here, because we're really only talking about eight forwards who are under current contract. And then as far as up at the NHL level, you really only have Ty Dellandrea, who's an RFA. So, that he's going to get qualified. That deal is going to get done. So that means you have nine forwards who are going to be under contract. You're losing not only Domi and Dadonov unless we go out and sign one of them through the free agency process, but you're losing Glenn Denning. You're potentially losing Kiviranta. And then you have Freddie Olofsson, who spent the last part of the season with the club as well. So there are a significant number of open slots there. And, you know, at minimum, Dallas is going to be taking 12 or 13 guys on the roster. And maybe we'll have more of a normal year where we have 14 forwards up with Dallas. And so there's a lot that can be done to put together a team that adds to what we have. And I guess my question with that long intro is, what direction do we need to go to make Dallas more competitive?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think going back to your point about the UFAs and, you know, the rush spot, I mean, it's a weird situation that Dallas is in because they have all of those forwards that are coming off of contract. They don't really have anything much of changing in form the defensive side. So they have only Hanley is a free agent. And if you're saying, okay, Delandre is for sure getting, you know, re-signed for obvious reasons, you have, you know, your nine forwards and minus whatever Delandre ends up costing you, they have they're projected at about $7.4 million in cap space. And so, you know, your conventional logic is saying, okay, hey, that's the cap space you're using to fill up your forward lines. You know, those additional forwards, re-signing them or getting some additional ones like we kind of talked about, you know, you don't want to neglect your forward lines or assume everything's going to be okay. But Dallas really also needs to try and find a fix for the defense. And that's why you hear everyone talking about, you know, stuff like sewer buyouts or, you know, Hakapa trades or stuff like that and revitalizing the defensive core, even though where your flexibility is at forward. So they're really in an odd, it'll be kind of a challenge for Jim Nill balancing that, whether it's utilizing buyouts or trades or however he wants to go about it, of basically transforming that, I guess, forward flexibility, so to speak, and managing to get some improvements on the D-line out there. And that's where you have cases where, you know, it's a big question mark because who knows how they're going to look like coming out of camp, but that's where you have cases like Maverick Bourque or Logan Sinkovan that look very tantalizing, not just from a, hey, here's a young offensive-minded player who could be a great add to the team, but specifically, hey, here's another player on an ELC that's you're going to be paying pennies to take up a roster spot and eating up minutes, and every bit of money you can save on filling out your forward lineup is in money you could then turn around and try to make a move to shore up the defense more, or to bring back, you know, a Max Domi or Evgeny Dodonov or, you know, a different free agent.
So let's start there, I guess, a little bit with the defense and break it down in more specifics, because even if you decide that you aren't going to re-sign Joel Hanley, and I know Sean Shapiro has put out there that Hanley's performance in the playoffs and maybe not even this year, but over the last several years has maybe priced him out of the role that he plays in Dallas, where he's the seventh defender who can step in and pretty much fill any role that need be. And if he misses a month, he'll come in and play a good game in that first game back. And that's something that works for Dallas at $750,000 a year, but it probably doesn't work for them if they're going a little over $1 million, given that they already have seven contracts other than his already out there with the defense. And so how do you transform that? Well, you have to move somebody. If you're going to do anything, you have seven contracts. The only way you can add is to subtract, because otherwise you have your full complement. And so that's why you're seeing people talking about, you know, a Suter buyout. And Suter regressed this year. We certainly saw some speed issues. He seems to slot in with Miro, which may not be the ideal way to get the best out of those two individuals. So there are a lot of good arguments why you could do that. No, on the other hand, it does extend out for an extra 2 years cap hit, but you do see some discounts, especially over the first 2 years. The other thing you say is, well, somebody like Colin Miller. Well, Colin Miller was a good performer during the regular season, but the coaching staff didn't trust him come playoff time. And is it worth having somebody slotting in on your team if there isn't that level of trust where you're willing to give him the ice in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting situation. And I think addition by subtraction is a good way to put it, because I think Dallas, ideally, they need to prove their blue line. And I think what you really like to see from Dallas is, you know, an aggressive approach where they're not just, you know, getting rid of some players, but they're also actively seeking out, hey, here's some players that we can find via trade or even free agency. People are undervalued, and let's make moves and let's not rest on our laurels. But that being said, you know, like we talked about, the flexibilities of the forward group. And I think if you asked most Stars fans, if you had, you ran back the exact same defensive grouping, you know, maybe Mindless Hanley, if, you know, beating out Price, potentially with his performance, maybe you slot in, you know, different seventh defenseman. But for the most part, if you ran back with the same defense and you just subtracted Ryan Suter, or you just, well, that's everyone who everyone wants. But even if you just subtract someone like Hakopai or someone else and you make room for, you basically want to get Nils Lundqvist back in the lineup, playing regularly and hopefully being able to build himself to actually have that trust in the coaching staff come playoff time. I mean, so if you actually told Stars fans like, hey, this defensive blue line is going to look the exact same as it does right now, except say Ryan Suter is gone, I think most fans would be happy with that. They might, it'll kind of be like the whole things could be worse, but they could also be a lot better. But I think that's probably the safer and not even necessarily safer, because it's a big risk to try and, you know, bank on Harley and Lundqvist possibly being top four defensemen, but definitely seems like the more, I guess, realistic path forward rather than trying to make this big swing to add to the defensemen, because, you know, the whole issue there and right now, if, you know, the call of Harley is that even if they, you know, don't re-sign Hanley, you know, they're sitting at seven defensemen right now, and you're then looking at who's the odd man out. Well, according to the playoffs, it's Lundqvist. I mean, do you really trust DeBoer to make Hakopa or Miller the regular seventh defenseman and healthy scratch? And I think the answer would be no. And so you're almost in a position where you already have to get rid of defensemen anyways if you're nil. And then if you're going to try and still add another defenseman on top of that to just improve your blue line, you probably have to turn around and get rid of a second one as well, just to make the numbers work and to just avoid that situation where Lundqvist is your seventh defenseman or eighth defenseman, or you're leaning too much into the veterans.
Well, and what Neil did last year might be informative for the way he thinks, because he not only brought in Colin Miller last year and then obviously the blockbuster with Lundqvist, but he also brought in Will Butcher in case Miller didn't work out. And Miller or Butcher ended up spending, you know, the entire season down with Texas. But that's primarily because the Stars had this amazing run where nobody on the defense got injured. And to tell you the truth, you know, as much as you love to see players not getting injured and being able to roll out the same group all the time, it left the Dallas in a situation here where they didn't have this normal flow up and down between Texas and Dallas, where you get an opportunity to see some of the younger talent that's been playing in Cedar Park. And so you have somebody like Ryan Shea, who's now a free agent, who led the entire AHL in plus minus. And I mean, throw it out. Yeah, you don't like it, but if you're a plus 37 for the season, you're doing something pretty right. And you're talking about a guy in his mid-20s who is a real good puck mover and spent a lot of development time in college before he made it into the professional game. And how do you keep bringing in guys like that into your AHL organization, thinking that they're going to get an opportunity to show what they have and play in the NHL if in fact, they never get a chance to move on up and play in the NHL? Sounds to me like a recipe for not being able to bring people in and develop prospects other than through the draft process.
Right. You're absolutely right, because one of the things Neil, kind of the front office and the coach staff, everyone that kind of said as kind of the season, you know, towards the end, it was just kind of like specific regards to Thomas Harley, is they were just like, you know, we thought, you know, Neil Biskey said, I expected Thomas Harley to be up in Dallas, you know, a lot earlier, because he expected there to be that injury under the blue line and okay, who we're going to call up, we're going to call Harley. And then Harley would spend that first half of the season or so in AHL and be essentially what he did and basically bust out and in bloom. And the only reason we ever saw Harley come up towards the end of the season was twofold. One, the coaching staff lost all trust in those Lundqvist, which meant that Joel Hanley was now your effectively top six defenseman, your number six defenseman, which wasn't ideal. But it was also just a case of them kind of saying, you know, we haven't needed to call him up, but we really need to at least see what he's got and let's give it a shot or whatnot. And, you know, he did great, and that obviously worked out really well. But, you know, the flip side of that is, you know, if Harley had been able to call up, let's say, halfway into the season and, like, played, you know, 40 games for Dallas, is he still eating, you know, just third pairing minutes in the playoffs? Or do we suddenly, you're talking about seeing, you know, regular Harley Heiskanen pairing, who's eating up more minutes or actually getting power play time or stuff like that? You know, there's maybe a lot of different actualization of the player in terms of ice time. If it wasn't just the last six games of the season, then boom, not just the last six games of the season, last six games fighting for that top division spot. You can't afford to lose any games. They didn't really, and they still didn't get the spot. And then bam, it's playoffs. Every game matters. Yeah, it definitely is an interesting case where there's a lot of cases where almost, yeah, you like to be healthy, but, you know, injuries, there's also benefits of, you know, players coming up and making their mark. You know, also, you know,
I mean, that's how Jason Robertson got, you know, you get these guys who come up from the AHL and they get their chance and they grab it and they never go down. That's how Hintz got his, you know, Hintz came up, found some things to work on, worked on them, came back up, boom, in. Robertson, same way. And without those opportunities, you aren't going to identify these guys who you absolutely need to be coming in on these entry level contracts.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's also, and it's less than the case for, I'm not necessarily so much in Dallas, but, you know, for instance, if we're looking at just from a cap relief standpoint, it's a big, you know, it's a big storyline of, you know, oh, Vegas and, oh, Mark Stone being magically healthy again once the season rolls around. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, if you don't have those kind of injuries, you know, you don't get to find the extra little cap relief to try and bring someone in. Or, you know, in the situation of like Dallas, you know, when Scott Wedgwood goes down and you need your backup, you need a new backup goaltender, but your kind of best backup goaltender option typically to actually eat up minutes is Anton Khudobin, who takes up a hefty cap hit and you can't call him up because you don't have any cap relief. I mean, so there's definitely a lot of ebbs and flows where it's, you know, it's almost like you want to be healthy for the playoffs. Health is very important, and you want to be as healthy as possible going into the playoffs and to be healthy throughout the playoffs as long as possible, because, you know, because injuries eventually happen. But during the season itself, it's almost, for lack of a better word, it's almost healthy for your organization to have those injuries from time to time and have those opportunities for not only, you know, players coming up from the AHL, but also having people who are being able to eat up more minutes because there's a role that needs to be filled. Those types of situations that you just don't get if you're miraculously healthy throughout much of the season like Dallas was.
Yeah, well, exactly. And let's actually spend a little time talking about the goaltender situation after we get a little chance here to hear from our partners at the Greening Law Firm.
You know, Mark, people get hurt from car accidents, medical malpractice, and other personal injury accidents, but they never call an attorney. They leave thousands of dollars in medical bills and lost wages on the table that could otherwise be covered, and instead, just take the insurance company's word. This is silly when you could just call Robert Greening at Greening Law. Greening and his Green team are fierce legal competitors for you against the insurance companies. Consultations are free, so you have nothing to lose. And there are no hourly attorney fees either. They only get paid if you recover.
Right? These folks definitely need to call Robert Greening and the Green Team.
Sure do. So remember, if you've been hurt in an accident, been a victim of medical malpractice, or have been hurt on a business's premises, call the Green Team at Greening Law in Dallas, Texas at 972-934-8900 now. They will fight your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. Greening Law, Office Dallas, Texas.
Let's talk a little bit about Matt Murray and the lack of trust in anybody but Otter. Any thought? Khudobin was an option except for the money, and to tell you the truth, he was probably the worst goaltender that we had down with Texas anyways.
Right.
But
which is funny because I think if Khudobin was able to be called up, even if he was the worst performing down there, I think he would have actually been the only goalie that at least in the NHL level that Dallas would have trusted to actually play some games, you know, because of his history and his track record and familiarity with Reese. It was kind of a, probably wouldn't have been for the, I mean, it wasn't exactly a great option, but as we saw, they definitely didn't trust any of the other Stars goaltending so much as start a game unless it was absolutely necessary.
Well, and I'm not going to hold them to the flame too much for that, because I mean, literally you're talking Matt Murray, who has 40 AHL games under his belt at this point. He was a certified rookie this last season with Texas. And for a lot of the season, then your other option was Remy Poirier, who I love him, but he has, you know, he's 21 years old, straight out of the queue and surprising everybody. But you know, are you going to say that you're going to trust the NHL team to him? Yeah, I can see some hesitation there.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, and what I always kind of go back to when I'm talking about this is Dallas, and this is something that I think every NHL team needs, especially for the, or at least the ones that are trying to keep competitive. You know, you really need the Mike McKenna type goaltender in your roster. And that doesn't necessarily mean the old grizzled veteran, but you basically need the person who you're confident. You're saying, look, your job is to play in the AHL. Your job is to be probably the top goaltender there, to be a good backstop for our farm team so that the rest of the players, you know, all of our forwards and defensemen have a good solid goaltending behind them. It's better for them to have success, to make the playoffs, to make deep runs, to feel confident. You know, that's your primary job. And also, if we have an injury, we can call you up and you can do that same thing and you can play games in the NHL. That's the sort of thing that Dallas really liked this season. I mean, you know, going forward, you know, maybe you think Matt Murray or someone else can become that role, or maybe you have to acquire someone else, because that's, at the end of the day, the issue was that Dallas kind of factored themselves in is because of the circumstances of them trying really hard to push for that, you know, top spot in the division and even really the conference, because they weren't that far off. They put themselves in a position where Wedgwood is hurt and they basically didn't have another goalie that they could trust to play and win games for them in a situation where they felt they needed to win every game. And that's why they rode Ottinger into the ground. The twist of that is, if Ottinger was the one who was hurt, then you probably are seeing Matt Murray starting a fair chunk of games, because twofold. One, they wouldn't think they could run Wedgwood into the ground, whereas, you know, Ottinger, you know, as a number one goaltender, that's like easier for them. Okay, yeah, we'll just play him a lot. And then two, at that point, if your starting goaltender, you know, is down, you're probably thinking, okay, yes, we could still make a push for, you know, top in the division, top of the conference, but that's very unlikely now. We can't get too ambitious. We can't do anything like that. We, you know, let's just bounce back and forth and kind of have a normal rotation. So it's kind of a victim of the circumstances, and that it was specifically Dallas's, in my opinion, it was specifically that Dallas's backup goaltender was the one who was injured, not necessarily either of the two options.
I have kind of a weird thought here. I think the Stars really need to consider upgrading their second goaltender. Wedgwood got off to a really good start, but his numbers are kind of just mediocre. I would love to see Wedgwood as that senior guy down in Cedar Park. And let's take a little bit of the cash that we have and upgrade and get somebody that you wouldn't be afraid to run into the ground if Otter went down for a little while.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, assuming, you know, waivers and getting through everything like that, it's definitely a thought. I mean, I think Wedgwood's a solid backup. I think Dallas is almost maybe a little bit spoiled in their recent goaltending history when we had Bishop, Vigari, and then Bishop and Hudobin, and then Hudobin-Ottinger, you know, the kind of thing that Dallas fed into himself that was different from this year versus every other year for the past while is that Ottinger is finally what was the number one goaltender. And it wasn't a 1A, 1B situation. It was, here is your number one goaltender. And it's something that Dallas hasn't really done for a while, because even with Ben Bishop, you know, Ben Bishop health issues, you had to kind of, you know, work around that. And so I think they're kind of fine with the standard, you know, backup. You know, Wedgwood is not going to be, you know, this game stealer is not going to be, you know, you're not going to have, it's not going to be a tandem where you're looking at like a Boston or something like that, or like Dallas has had in the past where either goaltender is going to be able to put up with that same performance. But I mean, their expectation, I think, is, you know, probably Wedgwood plays, you know, 30 games and Andre plays 50 or so. And with those kind of spread out and, you know, the injury, Wedgwood only ended playing 21 and, you know, then of course,
and Otter's over 60. Yeah.
And it's specifically towards the end of the year, because then it's a bunch Otter playing a lot of games in a row towards the end. Cause you know, if that injury happens at the beginning of the year and you kind of overwork Otter to start, but then you're able to, or maybe it's because the beginning of the year, you don't actually need to overwork him. You know, basically if towards the end of the season, you can rest him a little bit before AMP. So it's, you know, part of the timing. But I mean, I guess to your point, I mean, I think, you know, Jim Neal always says, and, you know, this was...
You never have enough goaltending.
Never have enough goaltenders, which was infamously said when Andre was banished to the AHL, much to my anger. But
on the other hand, you take a look at the way the year worked out, and really what you're talking about is you got schnookered into having two rookies down in your AHL with your AHL team. And nobody to even back up Wedgwood when he went down. So it's hard to argue that he's not right.
Right. Yeah. And you know, and so knowing Neal and his philosophy, in my opinion, there's just no way he, after having that sort of injury, regardless of how he feels about his AHL goaltenders, I think there's no way he goes into next season without adding on another goaltender. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what sort of move he makes in their guards and who he acquires. I mean, does he acquire the person, you know, the third veteran type that he, you know, is meant to just play in the NHL? Does he try and maybe go for a better backup and maybe try and put Wedgwood into that? You know, one name that, you know, is maybe interesting and possibly looking out is you have people like Mackenzie Blackwood who might not even be getting a qualifying offer. Maybe that's a situation where you look in and you say, okay, sure, we can take a gamble on you and we can make you our AHL guy and possibly even our backup, depending on how camp shakes out or stuff like that. Or you kind of go looking at some of the older options. But there's just no way, knowing Neal's general philosophy and then the fact that Andre is ridden to the ground and the two cup final teams are teams that have been using well-rested goaltenders or, you know, have used their goaltending depth to its full extent. There's just no way I think he, you know, sits back and says, "Ah, oh, things will be better next year. Like we won't have an injury. We won't have to worry about this."
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually like to see somebody coming in like the 26-27 range, where somebody isn't ready for a number one slot, but is ready for an NHL job. You have somebody like Joey Decord, who's the primary goaltender for Coachella Valley this year, taken to the Calder Cup final. And he's a free agent, you know, 26, I believe, and has had a smattering of NHL games, but he's finally hitting his stride. And, you know, that's somebody that maybe you can pull in for $2.5 million on a 2-year deal or something like that. That's somebody that you wouldn't necessarily not just roll with, you know, as a number two.
Right. Yeah. And with a flat cap world and, you know, teams having to constantly make, you know, these cuts or not issuing these qualifying offers or not just through lack of cap space. I mean, at the end of the day, Dallas is currently spending their cap hit for this upcoming season on goaltending is $5 million.
Yeah, which is nothing.
For things perspectives, Florida right now, their starting goaltender in the playoffs is taking up $10 million just by himself. So Dallas is definitely, even though they're not exactly ripe with cap space, they're definitely in a position where they could afford to invest some of that into the goaltending position, and they would still be coming out on the lower end.
They'd still be on the cheap side. Yeah, right. Exactly. And that gives you a little backup down in Cedar Park as well, where again, Dallas is really rich in goaltending at the minor league level, but they don't have a whole lot of experience. And so there's a big gap there. And I think that gap needs to get filled this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing I'd also like, let's move a little to the forwards here. And let me hear your thoughts on this. A guy like Freddie Olofsson, he's a bit older, but, you know, he played a couple playoff games, played some regular season games, didn't really show all that bad. And he's on a minimum contract. And at what point does Dallas need to decide that they have guys like this in the system where they don't need to go out and spend money on bottom half of their forward lineup?
I mean, it's kind of a little question. I mean, because, you know, the answer should be that they should have figured this out years ago.
Let me say one thing here. We talk about Jim Neal as this monolith. I think Jim Neal has developed as a GM, and he has gotten better as time goes on because he's learned some lessons. But and I'm just throwing that out there. But continue.
Yeah, no, I agree. The point I'm kind of making is that long before, even before the Neal era, at least, you know, when it was still a lot of the prospects and systems, you know, with Dallas, you know, that he kind of inherited or whatnot, or just so many picks. I mean, Dallas has been very, very good. And you could probably say this about most NHL teams, let's be honest. But Dallas has been very good at developing bottom six lineup forwards. And their biggest issue has always been finding the, you know, top end talent, which Dallas, too much to Jim Neal and this guy and team's credit, we're finally seeing with, I mean, look at the homegrown talent, young talent that we're seeing in the forwards with Rope Hands, Jason Robertson. You're getting Wyatt Johnson. You have on the Ty Dellandrea on the up and up. You have Logan Sinkovic, Maverick Bourque. So, and that's definitely an area they've improved in. And, you know, I think if you're Jim Neal and you're looking at this lineup, I think, you know, you have out of the UFAs, basically, you have the two free agency acquisitions, Zdenov, Domi. You have the two kind of 27-year-old and kind of depth defensemen, and, you know, Kiviranta and Olofsson. And you have Luke Glendinning. I think Glendinning isn't coming back. I think at best you get one of Zdenov and Domi. And I think you're probably also looking at, you know, just one of, you know, Olofsson and Kiviranta, to be honest. I mean, maybe both, but, you know, I think something.
No, I don't see how Kiviranta comes back. Just because he's established enough where he's going to be making over $1 million, and there's absolutely no reason why Kiviranta's role can't be filled by either Marian Nietzsche or Nick Camano.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that
same,
and
they're the same player. They're the same player and cheaper.
Right. And that's the thing where I'm getting is, because then when I think you see that the roster, and then when you talk about acquisitions, I mean, I kind of had a point for Dallas where you have to kind of make the decision of some of these younger players in your roster and your organization. If not now, if you're not giving them their shot now, like to be the next Kiviranta one-on, even if it's just to be, you know, a fourth line role, you know, when are you ever going to do it? I mean, when you talk about Camano or Damiani or Sunik, I mean, Riley Tuft is a UFA to group six. That's a former first round draft pick. And, you know, maybe it's a likely, hey, just don't bring it back. It didn't work out. Or maybe he doesn't want to come back because he never got a shot in Dallas. But I mean, those are the types. But ideally, that's not a player who for this season, you would have liked to be able to see, hey, it's now or never. Let's see what they kind of got their stuff. And so when it comes to some of those older prospects, those older players that they're cheap, they can fill in those bottom six roles, ideally. You know, they can be that kind of fourth line player. You don't really need to bring back Luke Glendinning or anything like that, or make sure you bring it back Kiviranta. You know, I think just from an organizational standpoint, much to you said, you have to give players an opportunity to prove themselves in the NHL. You don't really want to establish this relationship, especially when it comes to, you know, signing players out of the NCAA after their senior years or other free agents. You don't really want to get this idea of, well, yeah, we'll bring you on and you'll get some time in our AHL team, but we're going to also keep signing these veterans and you're kind of going to get roadblocked. I mean, you kind of just have to see, look, your profiling, your ceiling is going to be this bottom six, you know, forward. That's what, if you pan out and you develop well, that's the role you're going to have. What, now's the time that we see it happens, because, and if you don't, you know, if you're not filling up to the billing, okay, we have other players we can try and sign into, or we get other, you know, we can make mid-season acquisitions to try and address that. you just kind of can't. It's just kind of frustrating to see these type of players that are still in the AHL and are only in that kind of break glass in case of injury type, where it could be, you could very well see some of those players being a regular fourth liner for Dallas and doing just as good of a job, if not better, than, you know, some of the, you know, quote unquote veterans that have been filling those roles.
Well, and the thing is, you have somebody like Tufte or even like Rhett Gardner, and we're talking about guys who really had, this last season was their best season as a professional, and now they're hitting unrestricted free agency because either they didn't get enough NHL games in, or they've you know, aged out. These are guys I'm expecting to see in the NHL next year, and the question is whether they did all their development with Dallas and now somebody else is going to reap that benefit, or whether they've shown enough to Dallas that they get a chance. And I think this is one thing that really hurt the team this year. I understand why they did it for cap reasons, but I think it's pretty important to have an extra forward or two up with the regular team so that they get the time in practice with the NHL guys. And also so that you aren't so absolutely locked into running the same 12 forwards out there every single time. You maybe want to have a little shorter turnaround that says, you know, here's what we saw this last game. Look at this up in the press box for a game or two, and then you're going to get right back in there and implement it at the NHL level.
Yeah, and I think you're just kind of hitting the nail on the head. It's a sense reward. Even if you're calling a player, even if they're not slotting into the lineup right away, especially for some of those, you know, younger players that have been, you know, doing their time in the AHL for a while, it's kind of a big, you know, kind of a big boost. And they did call up some of those players, you know, for injuries throughout the year, but it's kind of that big boost to be like, hey, you're the person we chose as our next guy up, and you're either, you know, you are getting into a game where you are practicing with the team and, you know, getting to kind of make your mark. And, you know, coaches talk about all the time, you know, it's not just about game performances. It's about, you know, at the beginning of the season, it's about what you look like in training camp and drills. It's what you're looking like in practice, stuff like that. The truth is, you know, NHL coaches, you know, Pete DeBoer doesn't have time to be watching AHL film of games, let alone, you know, practices. He's just trusting in an organization. He doesn't get to sort of see those things. So even just any sort of time that those players can spend on the NHL level in front of Pete DeBoer, you know, that goes a long way into, you know, possibly, you know, garnering his favor, or, you know, getting that kind of that shot. You know, once you get shot.
And they're out there, you know, seeing the work habits of Joe Pavelski, and they're out there working with these NHL guys to. There's a level that you can get the AHL level, and there's a more advanced level that you can get at the NHL level if you want to put in the work. And at a certain point, if you're going to perform in the NHL, you have to spend your time and do it up against NHL competition, because it's never quite the same. You don't have that confidence that you're going to do it until you actually do it.
Right. Yeah. Which kind of goes back to my point earlier. You know, I think it's, you know, for some of these, you really kind of have to try and approach it as a, well, if not now, when, you know, are you really, again, Tufte, you know, is now a UFA group six because didn't get the games accumulated. Gardner's UFA due to aging out, you know?
Yeah.
It's like for some of those players, like who are 23 or 24, it's like that's on the horizon. That's in the next year or two, when they're going to be next 2 to 3 years or so, when they're going to be in that same boat. Are you really thinking, you know, if you keep delaying it, that you're basically going to miss their chance for them? And so you kind of just have to see. And I guess that's kind of the whole idea of, you know, what you should be seeing in training camp. But, you know, the reality of the situation is, if you go out and, you know, sign free agents at forwards, you know, like when they went out and signed, you know, Luke Glendinning, or, you know, on defense, Ryan Suter, Akapa, Miller, et cetera. You know, for when it comes to any sort of player, you're not having, you know, a Nick Camano beating out the new free agency signing. Even if the free agent signing was signed to be a fourth line center, that's just not happening. And
the Stars fourth line center at this point is Radek Foxa. I mean, I don't know that you're going to knock that around. Hopefully you don't need to have a backup for him, because that's a whole lot of money we're paying for a fourth line center. And Boxa should be the center of a pretty dominant fourth line given his pedigree.
Yeah, and that's where I think you say, hey, we can probably afford to have Foxa be the center to some of these younger players and have his kind of experience and defensive ability kind of maybe make up for any shortcomings. You know, I don't think you need to, if we're talking about Dallas and their ways to improve the defense, to improve their forward core, they don't need to go out and look for, you know, some defensive minded players to eat up fourth line minutes or something like that. That's not the type of move that they need to be making. You know, they have those players who can fill that role. It's just a question of, again, is that what Nil is actually going to do? And, you know, it's kind of,
well, yeah, that's kind of the down and dirty question that Jim Nil's going to have. And then, you know, the sexy questions are, what are you going to do with Bork and Stankoven and all these kind of high end talent guys who are young and you're just so anxious to see them at the NHL level and see what they can do. You know, that's probably a full podcast in and of itself. So what's your hot take for the summer? What unusual thing are the Stars going to do here?
Oh, as far as what I think they actually will do, or what would be at least...
Hey, it's a hot take, so you know, give me what you got.
So I know you wanted to bring this up, so I actually just looked at it. This is never going to happen for so many reasons. But if the Stars decided that Mason Marchment was just an absolute bomb of a signing and they need something, if you bought out Mason Marchment's contract, never going to happen for so many reasons, you would get $3.68 million in savings for your cap hit and increasing, if we're talking about trying to make your cap savings hit, making cap work and getting space to make some acquisitions or re-sign some players, that's not a negligible. And it actually ends up being a savings of, you know, about three and a third million over the total of the buyout. You know, and yes, that means you get, you know, 3 years down the line of a 1.1 million cap penalty, you know, but maybe if you're thinking 3 years down the line is when we finally start to exit out of the flat cap era and finally get that cap rising again. Maybe
or you get real creative and you say, here's a Marchment, have a Hakanpaa, what do we get back? I think there's some good trade options there. I think Marchment still has a lot of value there, and you know, it's kind of one down season. He's got size, he's got Tood, so some other GM's gonna bite.
And he's still on the younger side, and so yeah. I mean, younger, you're 27. There's definitely still value in there, and there would be a GM that'd be willing to say, "Hey, we're going to assume this last year was an anomaly." And you know, and from the Stars' perspective, that's probably why they're not going to do anything, because they're probably going to look at it as a, "Hey, you know, he was nice to start, and then kind of went through struggles. You know, some players take longer to adjust to new teams than others. You know, Joe Pavelski was not that great for his first season until, you know, bubble playoffs. Not that I'm trying to equate Marchment with Pavelski, but you know, there's definitely, I'm not as dour on Marchment as I think a lot of Stars fans are, but it was something interesting that looking at just how the contract breaks down and what that looks like. As far as interesting things that I would kind of not expect them to do, but I think they should definitely look into is, you know, as far as we were talking about earlier with the defense and filling out, just creating space on the blue line and creating extra flexibility. I think that starts with not just buying out Suter, but I think you trade Hakanpaa as well. And I think you go into the season with, you have on the roster at that point, you have Heiskanen, Lindell, Miller, Lundqvist, and Harley as your five defensemen. And then you basically pick up a seventh defenseman, whoever that is, and whether it's a return of Hanley or whatnot, and you basically go out and try and acquire a, you know, some person to eat up that sixth role, or, you know, get really bold and trying to actually go after a bona fide, you know, top four potential option using some, you know, draft capital or whatnot and really improve it. But I think I would look mostly to trade both of those players, because I think you'd get rid of Suter for a lot of reasons that I think a lot of Stars fans have heard or talked about ad nauseum. But I think you could apply a lot of that same thing with Hakapa, where he's going to be, I mean, in the playoffs, you know, yes, he was going through injuries, but maybe that was more so a convenient excuse. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, he's that, you know, big defenseman who eats the penalty kill minutes, and that's why we can't scratch him, because who's going to play on the penalty kill? Well, a lot of NHL defensemen can play on the penalty kill and do just a fine job. You know, that shouldn't be a justification for him getting these minutes and proceeding to get shelled at on 5-on-5. So that's definitely another player I would be looking at. I'd be heavily looking after trading away, and who you'd probably get value out of, because NHL GMs love their big hulking defensemen that eat up penalty kill minutes.
Yep. No, hard to argue with that. Although I'm going to throw one little twist on that. I think the trade is Colin Miller, not Hakanpa. Just because Miller was the guy who was eating the nachos in the playoffs, and Hakanpa, they were always bringing back in when he was healthy.
And I can see that as well. I mean, I think at the end of the day, with Miller being the newer acquisition after just a year, I mean, he only has a year left too, but I think with Miller being the year back and having, let's be honest, you know, it's kind of like a Lundqvist situation where throughout the season, he was fairly trusted and doing fairly well and good. And it was just kind of towards the end, they just couldn't trust him. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see DeBoer in his second year, how he approaches the blue line specifically and giving those players that trust back. But if Miller's on the roster, you know, and especially in the case of Nils Lundqvist, if it truly is a, hey, new season, let's go at it. Let's, you know, kind of start fresh, or, you know, let's get back to it and see how the development goes. Or if there's still kind of that same, you know, hangover from, I didn't really trust him at the playoffs, I'm not sure. We already start seeing at the beginning of the season Lundqvist eating scratches, and then we suddenly can start, you know, thinking, oh God, that was a waste of a trade. I think that's definitely remains to be seen of how DeBoer will and his staff will approach that situation heading into the new season, and how Neil kind of helped shape those decisions, you know, based on his offseason moves. Because again, if he, you know, makes some subtractions and makes it to the place where DeBoer really has no choice but to play some of those players, you know, like Lundqvist, into the lineup due to a lack of better options, well, then, you know, he's kind of made that decision for him.
Well, here's going to be my hot take. Here's my starting defense. First pair is going to be Harley and Heiskanen. Second pair is going to be Lindell and Lundqvist. And third pair is going to be Ryan Shea and Yanni Hawk. So that's my hot take, and I'll leave it at that. I'm probably going to be absolutely wrong, but that is what I'm going with. So that said, it's been great talking with you, Tyler. We need to bring you back, because I want to spend a whole podcast talking about Marchment and the young skilled prospects.
Well, it's a long summer. Thankfully, not as long as some other teams, but it's still a lot of summer days ahead of us. So.
Well, there's still hockey going on. Go Idaho Steelheads. Remy Poirier is playing as we speak. The last of the Texas organization still out there on the ice. So go Steelheads, and looking forward to the draft.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.